and welcome to Culture of Caring. I'm your host, Natalie Boyle. And today we have on a guest who I'm really excited to introduce you to, although you may have seen him if you were watching our North Texas Giving Day coverage. So this is Tony Pampel from the Samuel Allen Pampel Foundation. Welcome.
Hi, Natalie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. Now, yes, if you were watching the live stream of the North Texas Giving Day Ferry stuck in jail, we did a Chex Mix Challenge?
Yeah, we threw food everywhere. Uh-huh. Chex Mix Challenge.
And I'm pretty sure he won on that one. I was throwing handfuls in the air, and if they happened to land in my mouth, then that's what I would do.
But nobody loses with Chex Mix. That's the beautiful part.
That's a great point. And then, of course, I was crunching Chex Mix all the rest of the day. So, you shouldn't walk around with bare feet when you're trying to be a fairy in jail. So, anyway, thank you for being on today. And I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit kind of about your foundation.
Sure.
and how that started and just share a little bit with our audience.
So the beginning of the foundation really starts with my son, Sam, who's the namesake for the foundation. Sam was diagnosed with neuroblastoma when he was 3 years old. He came home with a bump on the side of his face, and it took about a month before we finally figured out what was going on. And Sam fought cancer for 4 years at 5 different hospitals, several different treatment regimens that we went through. There was chemotherapy, radiation therapy, immunotherapy. And unfortunately, in January of 2020, the rug got yanked out from under us. Sam had an infection of what's called an Ommaya catheter. He had a port in his head, basically, so they could put chemicals directly into his central nervous system. That's how serious it had gotten. And a port infection led to complications, and the cancer came back, and that was the end, unfortunately, pretty quick. And so you fast forward to September of 2020, and we have been very active in Pediatric Cancer Awareness Month, obviously, and we ran into a situation where we had just so many organizations that were vital to us getting through our fight that we wanted to support. It's very difficult to tell all of our supporters, we'll give a little bit over here and give a little bit over there and a little over there. And so we came up with the idea of maybe it makes sense for us to have our own foundation so that we can kind of funnel all of that stuff to these organizations that, unfortunately, nobody outside of the immediate pediatric cancer
world
experience or that one degree of family and friends that supports them, they don't know these organizations exist.
Yeah.
And so for us, it was kind of a dual mandate of raising funds and doling out that money, but then also being a bit of a voice for them and a sound piece to be able to get the word out there and spread that beyond that one degree. And that's why we're here. That's why we exist, is raising funds and awareness.
And when did the foundation actually start? Was that
foundation kicked off September of last year, so 2021. So we made it through September 2020, and that is when we realized that we had a problem because we had asks from so many different places, and it was kind of tough. 2021, we ended up raising. 2020, we raised $16,000 for an organization called Alex's Lemonade Stand before the foundation existed. That was me walking. Every single day in September of 2020, I walked 3/4 of a mile, looking very silly with a selfie stick, walking through the alleys of my neighborhood, because 3/4 of a mile is the distance from the Ronald McDonald House in New York City on 73rd Street to Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital and back. And that was where Sam had the last 6 months of his treatment. So every day, September 1st through September 30th, I walked that 3/4 of a mile, and I told a little bit of the Sam story. I was trying to pull the curtain back a little bit. So it wasn't all of the smiling bald children cancer conversation. It was, we talked about guilt, we talked about hard therapies and things like that.
Yeah.
And that brought in a lot of money, which also brought in a lot of problems for us on how do we do that? And so the foundation was born the next year out of that idea.
Yeah. Well, I think what you were just mentioning is talking about the hard stuff with it. And I think that is so important because while I didn't have to deal with it with my children, I've had to walk a lot of people through it and dealt with it myself. And I think that there can be this this idea that, like, you got to be the cheerful cancer patient.
Yes.
Who,
yeah.
You know, and I would think that's probably even, you know, more kind of with children, is it's such a hard thing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's such kinship and community in actually opening up the vulnerable parts. And so I just really applaud you for that. I think that's a pretty amazing thing that you chose to do. And like many of us who started nonprofits or foundations, it comes from some really not great things that happen in your life,
yeah,
or the
absolutely.
Worst thing that's ever happened in your life. And to choose to take that and make something beautiful out of it, I think, you know, I just want to just applaud you and say, I am so sorry for the loss.
Thank you.
Which I'm sure is always going to be fresh, but hopefully like in walking through these pieces that it gives you some joy for your son.
It does. It does. And Sam was a special child among special children. Mm-hmm. Like, we could see that. And even when we were, example, at the Ronald McDonald up in New York City, all the kids there were there for very similar reasons or more serious than what Sam was going through. And we still would have parents come up and talk to me about how special and amazing he was. He set the bar really high.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like you said, it's born out of this terrible, awful, worst possible thing that has ever happened to us. But someone once told me, you know, everything that happens to you also happens for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty happy with the person that I am right now and the work that we're doing. And we wouldn't have that, you know.
Yeah.
Certainly, I would trade it all back, but that's not an option. So
right.
We carry forward and we aim for the bar that Sam set.
I love that. So tell me some fun things about Sam.
Oh my gosh. Sam was a jokester. So this is a caveat for you guys. When you've been through the cancer fight, it's life. And life has very sad moments and very humorous moments. So Sam was a jokester. Sam was a prank puller. And some of my very favorite things that happened with him, like he was always telling jokes. And I think the prime example of this, at the very end of his fight, we were right over at Medical City Dallas, and looking out at this sunset, Sam had had a surgery to place a shunt in his head so he couldn't open his eyes for the last few days of his life. And if he wanted to look at you, this is going to go great, he would go like this, and he knew he couldn't see, so then he would do this. And he would look at you to make sure you understood what he was saying. And a couple of funny things happened. One night we're laying there and we're with him and it's the middle of the night and we all thought he was asleep. And all of a sudden he says, "Hey Dad." "What, Sam?" What did the nacho say to the taco?" "I don't know, Sam. What did he say?" "That's nacho cheese." And he told that joke and he laughed at himself. And then the very next day, which we did not know at the time, but the very next day was his last day on earth. And, the bishop of our church came in to give him his last rites, and he puts the chrism oil on his thumb. And again, we have all the family in the room and we think Sam is asleep because he's been there with his eyes closed, hasn't made a peep. And Father Anthony puts the chrism oil right here and Sam goes, "Not yet." 7 years old, just constantly pranking. And then of course he had this ridiculous love of dinosaurs. He got into an argument with an anesthesiologist one time about whether a Gallimimus was a real dinosaur or not.
Like you do.
Yeah, and he was literally being wheeled back for the placement of an apheresis catheter. It's like a soda straw that goes in your neck. He was given a drug called Versed.
Oh yeah.
If you've never seen a 7-year-old on Versed, it's hilarious. But yeah, he got into basically a drunken argument with an anesthesiologist about dinosaurs being real. Made me show the guy on his phone, on the anesthesiologist's phone, show him the dinosaur.
How wrong he was.
Yeah, yeah. And right after that, surprise, the anesthesiologist knocked him out. He didn't like that, I don't think.
Oh.
But
what a great spirit and what a great thing to be able to, you know, I mean, I loved what you did in Giving Day and you were doing all these silly challenges and you involved us in them. But I think that's one of those things that's probably a great celebration of Sam. If those are the kinds of things he would have liked, how beautiful that you honor him in that way.
Absolutely. We kicked that off with who could do the loudest dinosaur roar, because that's that was, you know, part of his deal.
Who won?
Oh, I won. I don't pull punches. That was me against my two children. And I don't pull punches. You don't get, daddy doesn't let you in. Mommy doesn't let you in at the Pample house. Mm-hmm. But when you beat us,
that's legit.
You know you beat us. And yeah, those poor children, they didn't have a chance.
Oh, I'm afraid we're going to have a dinosaur here off here.
Uh-oh.
Well, let's not bust out the microphones. But this is my perfect chance to share with the world my impression of a baby velociraptor.
This seems perfect to me. Yeah. I think this is a yes. Yeah. This is okay. Are we on our feet for this? Or you?
No, I can.
You
do,
have,
I can do a okay. sitting velociraptor. Believe it or not.
Okay.
And this is this really the dinosaur from Jurassic Park, who's very frightening in his own way, which starts out cute.
It does.
Ooh. Ooh.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. It's not beautiful. Loud, but it's something I've been doing for a long, long time.
So I'm going to, you asked me something great about Sam, and I'm going to channel my son right now. That's a Dilophosaurus.
I love
I'm sorry to come on your show, but that's exactly what Sam would have done, is very gently and very lovingly helped you.
I absolutely love that, and I will now. I'm sorry,
it's a Dilophosaurus. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, Dilophosaurus. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much trivia you want, but he would then give you trivia. The neck fringe.
Mm-hmm.
No evidence in the fossil record for the neck fringe on the Dilophosaurus.
Mm.
They put that in there for the Jurassic Park movie.
Because it was scary.
At that time, my 6-year-old son taught me that. 6 years old, and that was his thing. He learned about the dinosaurs, and he would share that.
I absolutely.
But it's an amazing Dilophosaurus because he is very cute.
Thank you. It's
and
very
curious,
cute, and
right?
It's scary. Yeah, yeah. You know, one of the things that is I'm really enjoying about this conversation, and if you don't mind sharing. So, unfortunately, I have many friends in my life that have lost a child. And I think that people who haven't kind of walked that get very, very nervous about what to say. And the reason I asked you to tell me about Sam is because what I've heard from them, and I'd love to hear if you feel the same way, is that one of the best things that they get asked is to talk about that child. Because I think a lot of people are frightened. They say, I don't want to bring up bad memories.
Yep.
It's not like it's bringing up something you're not going to think about every day of your life anyway, right? And so I just would love to hear if you have anything to share kind of with people who might feel like they don't know what to do in that space?
Yeah, no, absolutely. For me, I grieve through telling Sam stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I want my son's name to live on forever, and it is healthy for me to have those conversations. And I think that you can always feel safe there. There are, on one spectrum, two types of grievers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the vernacular, but they list them out as feminine grievers and masculine grievers.
Okay.
And they categorize someone like me as a feminine grriever because I like to tell the stories and I like to share.
Yeah.
And the masculine griever likes to kind of hold it in and keep it in. I will tell you that you will know very quickly if you are with someone who is not comfortable having those conversations, but I think they are very, very much the minority.
Yep.
A lot of people, they want, everyone around them is afraid to bring up the name.
Yeah.
I did this, and logically, I know better. Sam met a very, very special young lady at the Ronald McDonald House in New York City. Her name was Annika. And Annika had been fighting neuroblastoma since she was 8 weeks old. And when we met her, she was 8 years old.
Wow.
Her entire life had been in the same fight that Sam had. Annika passed away 7 months after Sam did. And she was also a merry prankster, by the way. So, like,
the two of them had kinds of shenanigans at the Ronald McDonald House.
They sure did. They sure did. But even I fell into this trap where I was reaching out to her parents, who we love each other. You run into those people every once in a while where it's just a natural fit, and that's us. And it got a little quiet on their end, and I started having this inner fear of, well, maybe they don't want to talk to me because Sam's memory puts up Annika's memory, and I brought that up with Cheryl, Annika's mom, and she told me how what an idiot I was, which is fair.
That's what good friends do, though. If you're good friends, you tell somebody when they're being an idiot.
And to go back to your question, I would always err on the side of bring it up. Nobody else does, so be the one that brings it up. And if they don't want you to,
it'll be clear.
It'll be clear. It'll be really clear.
So why don't you tell me a couple of the tell us all about some of the organizations that you guys support.
Yeah.
Because as you said, that and I find this all the time in nonprofit, there are resources everywhere. But especially when you're in that crisis, it's real hard to find them.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I'd love to hear about some of the groups that you support and why those were so important for you and your family.
So we are growing, right? So we had our first big event last year. We had a big 5K. And we chose four organizations that had been very important to us. And our aim is to support research, right? Because we want this to end.
Sure.
We want, as oxymoronic as this sounds, well, there's a five quarter word. What do you call those? Vocabulary.
Scrabble words.
Yeah, Scrabble word.
There we, I call them.
There we go. We want all of these organizations to just not have a reason to exist anymore.
Yes.
That would be the ultimate goal for us. But that is not happening tomorrow. And in the meantime, these families need that kind of support. And it's not just medical. Mm-hmm. The health insurance usually does a pretty good job of picking up the medical. There's always some fun surprises. But it's the little things that people don't think about, like transportation. I mean, when you live in Dallas and the hospital you need in is in New York City, that gets hard. And there's no medical expense for that. Places to stay when you get there, food to eat, taking care of siblings while parents are focusing over here. Just parking at the hospitals, even the local hospitals, charge every day that you're in the hospital. And so the organizations that we supported were kind of across that spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. So we started with Alex's Lemonade Stand.
I'm not familiar with that
one. So Alex's is a large national neuroblastoma-focused charity.
Oh.
We chose them because they have a great research grant program that they do. So doctors who are attempting to find new and innovative ways to treat neuroblastoma can apply for direct grant money. Here's exactly what we're trying to do. But also they support the emotions of the child that is going through the treatments. And then also they have this really cool program called the Super Sibs program, which supports the siblings. And so my daughter, Emmy, got a lot of informational and fun things through that program that helped her not only understand what was going on, but figure out ways to cope with that, which was great. So Alex's is a big one. An organization up in New York City called Candlelighters NYC, which is a direct support organization for families that are at that Ronald McDonald House or going through treatment at Memorial Sloan Kettering. So everything from food cards, grocery cards, a lot of those kids can't walk. So I had to push my 7-year-old in a stroller that 3/4 of a mile sometimes if he didn't have the energy to stay up on my shoulders.
Yeah.
Like that's where he liked to be and that's where we took him most of the time, but there were days where he could not ride up there, it wasn't safe because he didn't have the juice. So having a place that had a stroller we could borrow.
Yeah.
And then they also, you know, did little events there in town so that the kids had something they could get out of the house and come and do.
Yeah.
But everybody understood the requirements for those children, right? So Candlelighters NYC, the local Grief and Loss Center here in Dallas, which was a part of our personal journey, really helped us understand what's going on. They have a great program that just happens to be called the SAMS program, same as me, for young children who have lost a sibling. And so Emmy went through that again to help cope. And then Camp I Hope, which is one of my personal favorites, right?
Yeah.
So Camp I Hope is a week-long summer camp for kids who are actively undergoing treatment, who have survived cancer or siblings, right? So it's doctors and nurses staff the camp so that they can go and they can have a normal week, which that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it is huge, just huge to have that.
Well, I think several of the things that you have talked about the siblings, right?
Yeah.
And that's something, and I don't know how much if I've shared with you or not, but we actually do provide childcare for the siblings when they're going through treatment. And so both in play therapy services and just for childcare, because, you know, while Ronald McDonald House is absolutely amazing, they do such good things, childcare on site is not available.
They don't babysit.
Right? Which, I mean, my goodness, not everybody has to kind of find their corner. But that's why we actually have a partnership with their local one in Dallas, so that if families, because obviously I would think there are times you don't want to bring your other children with you if you're having a diagnosis conversation.
There are times you cannot.
Yeah.
You absolutely cannot. And that was, we were in a pre-COVID world.
Oh, yeah. And now,
right? And now it's really locked down.
Yeah. And so, but I think that's so important, is remembering siblings and what they need as well. And so, you know, that's one of the goals that we have one day, is that we will have childcare centers both at regular hospitals and pediatric hospitals where needed, so those kids can be absolutely loved on while, yeah, you know, siblings in treatment.
That's
and
great.
Get that, you know, one-to-one attention when they can. So. Yeah. Well, you know, just as we're talking, is there anything else you just want to kind of share about either maybe what your journey has been like? How has it affected you to create this thing? And what does that look like in your life now?
Yeah. This is the most selfless thing that I've ever chosen to do. The thing about having a child in pediatric cancer treatment is it was life on rails. It wasn't easy, but it was simple. The only decision I had to make every day was put your feet on the floor, get out of bed, because most of the other days were, okay, you have to be here for this scan at this time, you're gonna have this injection at this time, and then this is going on at this time. 4 years of our life. And we had a recurrence, and there's some good times in there too, but this feels good, because I can go to bed at night knowing that I'm doing something that is, for it started for me as payback. It really did. I felt indebted to these organizations, and so when I agreed to do this, it was, I'm paying this back. It doesn't feel like that anymore. There's still a little bit of that, but I'll tell you, a few weeks ago, the organization purchased a prosthetic eye for a two-year-old who didn't have another way to get it.
Yeah.
After his eye was removed because of a brain surgery. Nobody gets to say they did that. I
yes.
do, right? And so I'll own that, and I love it. And so it feels good to do good.
Yeah.
You know? And not just from a sending the money in. The money is important, but the time and the awareness that we build is every bit as important.
Yeah. Well, and I think that you know, one of the things I always say is that the trauma, these horrible things that happen to you, they're going to change you. There's no way you don't fundamentally change as a human being by going through this.
Yeah.
But you get the opportunity to choose how you change. And I think just, you know, the couple of times we've met, I think you have really taken ownership of that. And I think it's really beautiful that that's how you chose to go, and how you've just kind of created something so, so beautiful for your son.
And well, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so on a lighter note, we we like to end up here every time by sharing a failed so hard. Mm. So sharing something, you know, it's at our company, we believe productive failure is absolutely critical.
Absolutely.
And whether that's, you know, a silly thing, but or it's something like, oh my gosh, I made this decision and it was not the right one, and now we gotta go figure something out. So I just wanted to see, are there any failed so hards that you'd like to share?
How much time do we have?
I think we've got like 3 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. No, so you're gonna find out just how much my life is tied up with my children. I tried to sort through and think about what is one of these. And I'm a big believer that you grow the most when the failures happen.
Absolutely.
Right? If things are just going right, you're not learning how to course correct. And the one that always sticks with me, when my daughter Emmy was in fourth grade, I volunteered to be a part of the career day and show up and talk about what I do. And then I blew it. I got busy with work and I completely no-showed. And it is a afternoon school special sadness. She sat outside the office for an hour telling them, they would say, you need to go back to class. No, my dad's going to show up any minute for career day because he told me.
Oh.
it cuts me just thinking about this still, and I learned two things. One of them was a quick lesson, and one of them has been delayed. The quick lesson was to forgive like a child, because my daughter was sad, but when she saw how sad I was about it and the week or so of constant apologizing that came afterwards, she finally told me, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
This was a fourth grade girl telling me it's okay. The other part of it was a knee-jerk reaction to, I will always be on time every time, I'll never let her down again. Impossible.
I was gonna say.
Not possible, wow. Right? No, I failed that, mm-hmm. Right? And so she and I had that conversation the next time that something happened and I was late picking her up from somewhere because I got tied up. And she reminded me that it's not possible to be perfect all the time.
That is a very impressive fourth grader.
She always has been. Let's face it. She had to grow up fast, yeah. Unfortunately. But it's okay to forgive yourself and give yourself a little grace. And I won't even say I'm a closet perfectionist. I'm a straight up perfectionist. And so I spend all my time focusing on the gap between where things are and where they could be and not all of the good. And so she reminded me to, you know, look at the good things that you're doing.
And I've never heard something phrased that way as apologize or what was forgive like a child?
Yeah.
What was it?
Kids forgive and forget. Like they don't hold on to stuff the way we do.
Oh yeah. We hold on to it real tight.
Yeah. And it's funny. We hold on to it and the person who slighted us, they don't even know.
Yeah.
Most of the time they don't even know.
Yeah. I think that's a really good, I mean, I think there's so many things that you learn as a parent. Of going like, oh my gosh, you know, this person who doesn't have a full concept of the world, but has this like just beautiful insight that we lose when we pile on all the things that comes with being an adult. So, all right, is there anything you have coming up that you'd like to share or events or what, you know, what's going on in your world?
Funny you should mention that. November 6th is our second annual big race coming up.
Great.
So the Samuel Allen Pample Dino Dash in 5K. Yay. It is not a serious 5K. Like you can come out there. There are serious runners and they are amazing and I am jealous. But also we have a bunch of people who come out just to have a good time and walk. There's a ton of kids out there. It's all set up for kids stuff. Bounce houses. We've got tattoo artists. Temporary. We've got face painting. We've got food trucks. It's happening November 6th was Sam's birthday. So it happens on Sam's birthday. So it's a big birthday party and a run. And we just have a really, really good time. Awesome. And we're really trying to kill it this year. And we want to beat last year so we could use more folks to come out, run, hang out, anything you want to do.
And where can people buy tickets? Through your website?
Yes. Or where? So if you go to SamuelAllenPample.org.
We'll also put this in the show notes.
Thank you very much. We picked the longest URL we could. SamuelAllenPample.org, and then click on the 5K link, the Dino Dash link, and all of the information is there. And then there's a link on that page that takes you to the run registration.
Perfect.
Really cool t-shirts that you get for running. We have a virtual option. So if you're not in Dallas at Bachman Lake Park, that's not an excuse. You should still be with us virtually. Yeah. It still comes with a t-shirt and everything. So it's awesome. A really good time for a really good cause.
I will absolutely look and see if I can bring my kids because I think they would enjoy that. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
We are going to put, again, the website in the show notes just so everybody can make sure to check it out. And I just really appreciate you sharing and your vulnerability and your also just your spirit and attitude. I think it's a joy to be around you. So.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
What'd you build?
A T-Rex.
Does your T-Rex have a name?
Rexy.
Rexy? Yeah. What does a T-Rex sound like? Do you know?
This is a baby T-Rex.
Oh, a baby T-Rex?
Yeah.
Is that the mom T-Rex? The bigger one?
No, that's the daddy
T-Rex. Dad T-Rex?
Yeah.
Culture of Caring with Natalie Boyle is brought to you by Mommies in Need, a nonprofit organization with the mission of caring for kids so that families can access healthcare. The podcast is hosted by Natalie Boyle, produced by Tabitha Evans and Real News Communications Network. If you have an idea for a topic or guest, or want to share a hashtag failed so hard moment, email us at coc@mommiesinneed.org. Please remember to rate, like, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Video versions of the podcast are available on YouTube.